of the hour up first. We will recap the PGA tournament from over the weekend. What a phenomenal final 18 yesterday. Really good theater. The PGA tournament, it goes to Xander Schauffele. We will talk about that with our friend Matt Rudy, who was in Louisville for the weekend. Coming up, Golf Digest, where you can read Matt. He will join us at 11:30. About 11:50, somewhere between 45 and 50, Scott Dockerman will join us. We'll pick Doc's brain on Iowa. He's actually, you know where he is? Good morning, Trent. Doc is in Los Angeles. The Big Ten meetings are taking place.
Oh, this is
not in Chicago, not in Indianapolis.
And they're probably staying at, what, like a Motel 6?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Right, something. Yeah. Super 8, maybe. But, yeah, I'm guessing that there's a pretty swanky place in L.A. But get used to it, right? The conference has expanded its footprint west, as we know, and they got to throw that that part of the country a bone. So the Big Ten is there, and so Scott Dockerman from The Athletic, by the way, wrote a pretty good piece on Iowa State and look at their outlook for 2024 earlier last week, I guess, at The Athletic. So Doc at 11:50-ish at 12:05, Matt Snyder on Major League Baseball, and then Alec Bussey at 12:30 to talk about Iowa State. There was a press conference last week that we really don't think we touched, just the fact that the folks were over from Dublin and had a local press conference. We'll pick Bussey's brain on that. Pollard was a part of it, of course, et cetera, et cetera. Before Trent makes his plays of the day, Circus Sports will sponsor those coming up here at about 10 minutes before 1 o'clock. Not a big slate of games tonight, a little WNBA, although the Fever covered.
It did.
So all those folks that just thought this was easy money. Money.
Hand raised.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Of course you did. But you did have Schauffele golf-wise, so he got you home. That was a big hit out of you for that one. That was a fun tournament yesterday. Did you think, watching him come down the stretch, that this guy's going to seal the deal, or were you expecting him to cough it up?
I expected him to cough it up. The way that DeChambeau, the putter, was working.
My God, he's a good player.
Yes.
You know what I'm starting to think, Trent? I think I had him wrong. I think he's a better person than I thought he was.
Yeah, the toss in the ball.
Yeah. The toss in the ball was awesome. What Trent's referring to is he was walking to the scores table and there was a little kid that wanted a ball and DeChambeau autographed it and tossed it to him, only to have it picked off by an adult.
And he went moving.
Right. And the adult immediately turned and tried to make a beeline out of there with his prized possession. And Bryson DeChambeau went to the ropes and started yelling, come back here, come back here, come back. That's not for you. That's for this young kid here. And not only did Bryson get involved, some of the spectators that were there were also trying to stop the interceptor, and he came back. But it was more than that. I see him do a interview-wise. I know he's put out a lot of teaching Twitter videos, which I find, I don't play the game, but I think he does a nice job doing them. I think I had my opinion of DeChambeau's come full circle. Anyways, none of that, that doesn't matter. But it was a hell of a tournament, and he was hot.
He was absolutely hot. And we've seen this from Schauffele before, where, well, he talked about it when I threw him, I bet, once again on Wednesday when we were talking about it. He is just a guy that can get off to tremendous starts, as we saw in this tournament. And come the weekend, that is when the wheels have started to get a little shaky.
Mm-hmm.
But he had it here. And that shot to lay up on 18.
Oh, my God, what a shot.
With the sand
standing in the
you.
Sand, club you, above your feet.
You got to dig down a little bit more to try to get yourself firm. The foot slips, yet gets enough on it.
Yeah.
It was that moment that we'll probably remember from this tournament, is that shot that ultimately led to him getting the birdie and getting home at 21 under par. A guy that has always been there. It's never been a talent thing with Xander Schauffele.
Always a hell of a player, but just can't get over the hump.
And you wondered, it was getting to that point, as it feels like it just gets deeper and deeper. And we talk about the young guns coming up. And this week it was Nøberg, as he's dealing with a knee injury right now.
Oh, is that what was wrong with him? Okay. Did you know that prior to the tournament?
I did, and yeah, you saw my card, and I did not have him involved.
Yeah, you didn't. Yeah, and you usually do.
He's a guy that I was on. Hovland, seeing him bounce back, going back to his swing coach, and now get ready for Hovland. I think he's
think
next
you're right.
To,
yep.
He's going to be a guy I think I'm going to be adding before we even get to the U.S. Open, because I think that price is going to continue to dwindle as he's right. And he talked about pulling out of the tournament.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because he went back to his old swing coach, just didn't feel like he had it. He said he was playing so poorly early in the week. It crossed his mind to pull out. He got it figured out. And a lot of times, that just going back to that swing coach can be something so simple. could be a tweak here or there. Mm-hmm.
Something he notices.
And you saw it overall. But yeah, back to Shoffley. Yeah, nice hit. Plus 1550 is what I had him at. Well, I probably bet on him, I don't know, 30 times. I'm not exactly ahead on Xander Schauffele because him and Morikawa both are two guys that just throughout the last 6-7 years are almost always part of my card. Mm-hmm. A disappointing end, I thought, to Morikawa. A guy that already has a major, but just didn't have it on the weekend.
Wasn't there a time yesterday that he was tied for the lead or one shot off the lead?
Yeah, he was real close. And after that double... from Shoffley, he was still right there. He didn't have a birdie, though, till 18. On that course, he can't do that. No. You just can't. That course was there for the taking.
Yeah, Thigala, same way, finally got his birdie on 18.
Thigala's a guy, I heard a PGA correspondent mention it this way, and I thought it was a really good. He still doesn't understand exactly how talented he is.
Is that right?
You know, and you got to have the reps. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that when we get to the NBA, getting those reps in. But it's something in major championship golf for most people. There's outliers, of course. But for the most part, you got to have. And that was a good moment for Thigala because he's going to get one. I think he's going to get probably a couple in his career. He's that talented.
I bet him to get this one, Trent. I made two bets. I bet Koepka and I bet Thigala.
Disappointing for Koepka? What happened on
Saturday's
round?
Yeah. Saturday's round just was terrible.
Because him and Hubbard were together on Saturday.
Is that who his match
was? Yeah. And Hubbard was outstanding Thursday, Friday. A journeyman guy, now in his. I think he's 33, 34, something like that. He's just always been around. You're always waiting. Now, his brother is a guy that I listen to a lot that's a PGA correspondent. So that's kind of the reason that I hear about Mark Hubbard more than normal people just because I listen to his brother's podcast. But, yeah, a Saturday where neither of those guys could get it going. I was with you. I thought Koepka was ready to go. We go to live. Now, DeChambeau, yes, he was right there. And obviously easily could have won this tournament. But the rest of the guys, they're just... This isn't good for them. It really isn't. These three-round putt-and-giggle tournaments, going to a Muni to play major championship
Although
golf.
DeChambeau says it helps him because he's allowed to spend more time practicing.
For him, probably. Mm-hmm. But he is also an outlier.
Yeah, it has not worked for John Rahm.
John
Rahm has
not.
Had a horrible first two majors.
And he's trying to mend fences and do everything possible because I think he realizes not playing four-round tournaments, not playing against the best week in and week out, it's impacting him. He needs to have that kind of push, and he's not getting it on that live tour. Can we just get this thing figured out?
I hope so. I do. I think it comes at the bottom of the line. Certainly one of the sticking points is the PGA does not want to take this globally.
Yeah.
And Liv wants to take this to other countries, and that's why Rory McIlroy is no longer on the players' board.
And another one of the – so we saw what Jimmy Dunn resigned from his post a week ago. The guy that took over within a week, he's gone too.
Is that right?
What's going on here?
The drama off the course.
Yes.
I mean, we didn't used to have this in golf, right? Well, it goes back to Friday. By the way, this is, and I'm sure you were as stunned as most people out there when the word came that Detective Gillis did not turn his body camera on.
Shocking.
Son of a gun.
Mm-hmm. Shocker, right?
Just forgot that part of it. No video. Darn it, anyways. Of all the.
They're going to drop these charges.
Yeah,
right?
They're going to drop today, I would think.
Yeah.
Because he's supposed to appear tomorrow. I mean, come on.
It's ridiculous.
It really is. But I'll just
and I feel terrible for Scheffler. And listening to people that were around and watching Saturday night, watching live from, which the golf, no, if you're a golf fan.
So where is this, on Golf Channel?
Golf Channel. It is so good. And
a recap of the day?
Yeah. Recap of the day and really digging in deeper. They do an incredible job of it. It's really, we talk about Inside the NBA. Mm-hmm. For a studio show, for me, it's right up there. It's
really?
College game day. I think they do that good of a job if you're a golf fan of digging in and going deeper outside of kind of, the strokes.
Do they look ahead to next week?
Not too much. It's previewing the event. They do a lot of good jobs. They have people that are doing it.
I've never heard of it. What's it called?
It's just called Live From. And then
Live From. Okay.
Live From the PGA Champion. Live From the U.S. Open. Live From the Masters.
So what time? Like at 9 o'clock?
They play it like all throughout the evening, too.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
So if you miss it, I gotcha.
Yeah. And it's on all throughout the day leading up to the week. It's if you really want to dive into a tournament, if you want to get excited about the U.S. Open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before, it is something that is, for me, must-watch television as a golf fan. It's that good, and they do a great job of it. So put that kind of in the back of your mind as we look forward here to another month in the U.S. Open. That thing at Pinehurst number 2, hearing a little quick look ahead to that, that's going to be a monster.
Is it? You don't think 21 under is going to win the winning score?
And personally, I don't like that. For I don't either.
I'm with you.
I think U.S. Open tricks it up.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that.
They do.
Because it's once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that part of it once a year where we get
the winner golf. The winner's not double digits under par.
Right. And it's, you can hit a great shot and you're going to get unlucky. And you, or you miss a spot by a yard. Yet that's the difference between having an 8-foot putt and rolling off the green. It's once a year. There's luck involved. There's all those different things. But for once a year, I am fine with that. And from what I've heard, Pinehurst, that thing is going to be a monster, the way that the course is kind of trending at this point in time.
Well, I just love the way the majors are set up now. Bing, bang, boom, month, instead of that long gap. We'd still be in about halfway through the gap from the Masters to the second major, the U.S. Open. We would be. We'd probably be at the halfway point about right now. Well, let's go to Denver. I'm guessing as this had to be for Minnesota sports fans. A, you had no idea. You'd never experienced that before. And this was a quarterfinal, if you want to.
Yes.
But, so you're not over. You're not there yet. But just I'm guessing there's a lot of pinching going on. Is this really happening? Am I really awake type of moments? Trent, I thought they were dead after 24 minutes.
No.
I thought they were cooked. There's no way they're coming back from this.
They didn't have an answer for both. What we saw, especially in that first quarter with Murray.
Murray was unbelievable.
He was getting to a spot. Yep. He was knocking down shots. Jokic, what do you have, 13, 15, and 4-5 in the first half?
Something crazy. And hadn't hit a three.
And hadn't hit a three. Like, what are you going to do?
Right.
Jokic put up that, and he wasn't shooting the ball well.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to do? And the third quarter was just so odd. So, kids, get out of the bath at halftime. Put them to bed. Check the phone. Make sure the wife didn't see me so I don't get yelled at. And I'm like, they cut it to 8. And then she comes in. She goes, it's a 5-point game. And it's right as Jack is falling asleep. I'm like, okay, perfect. I get it. But going through, so I rewound it and watched it again and fast forward. And like, it wasn't just a spurt, right?
That no, you it was see defense.
The, yeah, it wasn't what you normally think of a comeback of 15 down and 20 down that you see in a quarter. That's not how it was defense. Yes. You said it perfectly. That's, they were just absolutely in the right spot. Naz Reid was unbelievable
the
again.
Entire game. Cat being in foul troubles, and he played well.
He played really well.
But him being in foul trouble led to more minutes for Naz Reid, who was out of his cotton picking mind.
You know,
thought he was good.
The first half, they were sending doubles at Ant, and to see him, he finishes 6 of 24. But it was not a 6 of 24.
No, nowhere close.
You could see the gears grinding. How am I going to figure this out? And he did. He was able to figure it out. First half, they were making too many of the extra passes. And it ended up a lot of times in Gobert's hands, and that was a disaster. He had that fadeaway.
Fadeaway, turnaround. As big a shot as this guy's ever hit in his career.
Just stupid. I mean, that goes in, and that was the moment.
It was.
I said, oh, my.
They're going to win
They're going to do this?
Yeah.
Now,
what a big shot.
When Cat turns it over on the inbound.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
The Minnesota sports memories start flooding back very quickly on that one.
Yeah, what was Cat doing? Call a timeout.
You got two left.
Right.
You have two left. And right away, Ant wanted the ball. He just had his hand out. Didn't get it to him
got
there.
Got pushed from behind.
Runs the baseline, which is good. That was, but yeah, call the timeout.
Yep.
And if Finch was up.
Ooh. Never thought about that part. I bet he does. I bet he gets it. I bet he gets in his head and gets that call. I bet he does. That's a good point.
You have to give credit to those two guys, though, with Finch getting up a little bit more. He's got the crutches now. He's trying, but that's difficult too. You go on the road for a game seven. You're getting bludgeoned. You're down 15 at the half. You're down 20 early in the third.
58-38, I think it was.
And keep it together and find a way and to put it all together. It is, well, as
against
we know,
the defending champs.
Yeah.
With the best player on the world.
And Murray, that was playing outside. Now, Ant's defense against him in the second half.
Oh, my God.
Was incredible. And that steal and the run out that he got.
Yeah, the dunk.
That started
to. You notice what he's doing on those steal and run? It's not showman stuff. It's a two-handed dunk.
Just get it in there.
Just get it in, right.
Yep. And the wave into the crowd, and Jokic didn't like it, which is fine.
Yeah.
I'm completely
fine. But after the game,
the
respect factor that Jokic showed for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
He said they're built to beat us.
Uh-huh.
And they were.
That's right. I mean, but saying it. They spent $500,000 to come up with an answer for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the $500 million was spent on the three bigs, Gobert, Cat, and Reed. And it worked. They tired him out yesterday.
You could see that in the fourth quarter.
Without a doubt. Everything was short.
And it didn't seem like we'd seen that from Jokic, at least this iteration, early in his career when he was out of shape. But over the last 5 years, we haven't seen this out of this guy, and he finally worked out. You're finally able, it reminded me of Rocky IV, the Russian is cut. You know, it's that kind of moment where Jokic is not Jokic right now, and it's because of the number. Kat, we said it on Friday. This was, of everybody on the two rosters, the most important game.
And he rose to the occasion.
And he showed up.
Yep, he really did. That that putback dunk was unbelievable. Naz Reid, when Naz Reid's passed to Anthony Edwards in the corner of the floor after, who stole the ball? Conley stole the ball.
Yep.
What a game he had, too.
Absolutely.
Is he 36, Mike Conley?
It sounds about right, yeah. You know, yeah, right in that range. And he's still doing it. And
he is 38. Yeah, my eyes are bad. That is a 6.
Oh, 36.
I can't tell. It's either a 6 or an 8.
All right, let me. I got it right here.
Your young guys, take a look. It's either a 6 or an 8.
One of the two, Mike Conley, is 36. He'll turn 37 in October.
Okay.
In October, when I believe the Timberwolves will be here for a preseason game.
You know, that's going to be great.
Yeah.
Here's my criticism of what they're doing over there at the event center, and I like them a lot. They're putting the poster out with the four bigs. You're not getting Carl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, Naz Reid, who am I missing, Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
They're not all coming.
You're getting
hope they're coming.
You hope a couple of them there. You hope they'll all at least show up and do some autographs and do those kind of things.
Right.
But the chances all four are going to play.
Precisely.
Not real high.
It's just like our friends at the Iowa Cubs, and I ask Sam Burnaby this all the time. If you know you've got somebody here on a rehab, promote it.
Right, yeah.
They won't.
Yeah.
Because what if he gets called up, and is this family over here bought tickets to see this kid, to see him pitch?
Right.
And he got called back to the show. They've never done it. Never. And I saw the ad again this morning. I get what you're doing. I want it to be a successful. We've got a good partnership with them. I think you're going about it wrong because there's going to be significant blowback when Gobert, when Ant, when Kat, or Naz Reid aren't all here.
Now, Jay,
am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. I'm with you, too. Yeah, the chances of all of them playing are slim, but it'll be a cool event.
It will be, absolutely.
And they win another series.
Oh, can they?
Yeah.
They're favored to do so.
More significantly than I anticipated. So I looked
and they
this
beat
morning.
Them 3-1 in the regular season?
But all those games were before the trade deadline. The two games in Minnesota, I don't think that Luka played in either. And I'm not talking about Luka Garza. I'm talking about the other Luka.
I was hoping you were, as a guy who's got a big ticket.
Right. Didn't play in either of those games. And I think, what did I hear? That something like Kyrie missed a game or two in the series, too.
Oh.
So it hasn't been the full complement of the Mavericks. Season series, I don't think, paints the picture here. But minus 170 for the Timberwolves, plus 150 for the Mavs on the buyback. I thought it'd be more like minus 140, plus 120 range. That was bigger than I thought, but also being a fan, sometimes your eyes get a little, deceive you a little bit, and it's Minnesota sports. It's weird being favored.
And they start Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, yes. Get in price. $511.
Is that what it costs to get in? It's good for them.
Because I got the text from my buddy Rusted that I talk about from time to time. Yeah, yeah. You going to make it up? Well, let's see. No. Not at those prices. I don't think we're going to make that happen. Yeah. $511 to sit in the upper deck corner.
No. Watch it on TV.
Yeah, we'll
watch
do
it
that
on TV.
Instead.
Oh, my God, what a series it promises to be. Meanwhile, Indiana takes care of a banged-up Knicks team.
Yeah.
ESPN is just getting killed for their coverage of that game yesterday.
Why is that?
Just because of it was so – and I am such a significant – I watch more golf than I did the early basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it was so significant. Stephen A. Smith is a Knicks guy.
Yes, right.
And it skewed more Knicks – even at the end of the game, it was about the Knicks getting beat.
Sure.
Not the Pacers moving on to take on the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
The slant was more about the Knicks and the run that they were on. And hang on, they just got beat. To talk a little bit about the Pacers over here type of thing. And it just goes to, I mean, get ready, folks, because the A-team's about to be out of work on the unemployment line.
Uh-huh.
If indeed these rumors are true, the TNT is going to be out of the NBA business. And it certainly looks as though that's going to be the case, but they're just not even close, the two of them.
This Pacers team, one of the more unlikely conference final teams that we've seen. We had Portland a couple years ago, but you know, they had Dame Lillard.
Right.
And he got on a heater in the first two rounds, and that's going to happen. But you kind of look at this team as a whole, going out and getting Siakam.
That was huge because he's built for the playoff. Yeah. When you think about that Raptors championship, he played as big a role as anybody in that.
It's going to be talked about as obviously Kawhi's. But,
oh, sure.
But Siakam was huge. Was so important in that. And he played so well. And most everybody could have had him at the deadline. Yep. But you look at the deficiencies. Well, he can't do this. He can't do that. Well, he's, what, a top 40 player probably in the league? Something in that range?
In postseason, he's even elevated his stock higher.
And you didn't have to sell the farm in order to get him. Yeah, you had to move some parts. But credit to Halliburton, too. He looked so bad. What game was that? Was it game four?
Oh, yeah. He had one real stinker where he didn't want to shoot.
Yes, and slow start in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He was banged up at the end of the regular season. Well, this thing's going to be over.
But when he's smiling and he's dancing, he's having
chirping
fun
a little too.
He was chirping. Oh, yeah. He absolutely was chirping. He and DiVincenzo had some, I wish they were mic'd up. I'd love to hear that. DiVincenzo had a really good game in his own right. Let's be fair to him. He was terrific, but Halliburton was good. So we got two clones and a Hawk in the Final Four? Garza, Morris, Halliburton?
Yes.
Am I missing anybody?
Nope.
Pretty good for our little state of Iowa here. Pretty good.
Will we see Monte? Does he get back into the mini rotation?
I was surprised they didn't even play him at all.
You know, game seven.
Yeah, that's true.
You're going to go a little tighter.
Yeah.
I think we'll see him probably both games early on.
Do you think so?
Get, you know, a four-minute run maybe in the second quarter.
Uh-huh. And he was you know, you kind of, I'm rooting for the T-Wolves to win it all, obviously, a ticket or no ticket. But the fact that he was part of that Denver team and got traded to Washington, and then Denver turns into Denver and win a championship, and Jokic goes, takes his game to another level. So Morris kind of got cheated out of winning a ring. It'd be nice for him to get one as another trade deadline guy that comes over there. But pretty cool for our state to have Cyclones and the Hawks represented in the Final Four.
And we get a Game 7 in hockey tonight.
We do. One that's the only one that matters. And I'm kind of glad that the other two didn't get there because I wanted to turn on Channel 5 and just leave the damn thing there last night. Or 2:45, rather. It was there was no hockey to kind of tempt me a little bit. After 29 straight days of NHL playoffs, last night there was a break in the schedule, and they'll be back at it tonight. Real quick, did you see any of Caitlin Clark on Saturday?
Just maybe 8 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, what I watched, she's starting to come around. She's starting to
figure it out.
Her teammates are starting to figure her out a little bit.
Yep.
You know, when did they get to play somebody else?
Right. It's the same teams.
It's the same teams. They open at Connecticut, then they go home and home with New York, and here comes Connecticut tonight.
Well, after that, you'll get your wish.
And there is television tonight of this game. I think it's, is it the four-letter network?
It is. ESPN's got it. 6 o'clock tip-off for that one. And then after that, it will be a West Coast road trip. Wednesday at Seattle, Friday at L.A., Saturday at Vegas.
Good stuff. All right, we got to get our break. I want to try and stay on schedule here. Let's get Scott Dockerman, who is in Los Angeles. We'll get to Matt Rudy first. This is the final week of Bonus Bucks, your last week to try and claim some of those $1,000 that keep getting handed out all throughout the day. Bonus Bucks time.
Win $1,000 now from 106.3 KXNO. KXNO's Bonus Bucks keyword is
win. Win at KXNO.com. Your chance to win $1,000 in this nationwide contest. The keyword is win. Matt Rudy next. Miller and Condon underway on a Monday. Des Moines Sports Station 106.3 KXNO. Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back. Des Moines Sports Station 106.3 KXNO. Just past 11:30. Again, the keyword was win. Win. Your chance to win $1,000 in the nationwide contest. Another keyword coming up in about less than an hour from now. Matt Rudy was in Louisville for the weekend. The PGA, Valhalla, goes to Xander Schauffele, and Matt joins us. Matt, Trent, and Ken, thank you for coming on. I remember when golf used to just be, you know, we'd recap a tournament just by talking about what went on in the course. What a crazy weekend. You toss in the McIlroy and Balbinot, or is that how you say your name? The rumors that are out there, whether they're true or not. That became a big talker. Oh my God! What a tournament! What a 4 days! What a fun! What a fun tournament, Matt Rudy. How are you?
I'm good. I do have to say, Rory's probably pretty happy. Well, not happy, but I mean, the events on Friday pretty much the Rory divorce stuff right out of the news. But
yeah,
if you had given me 1,000 guesses for current and retired PGA Tour players that I would have expected to wake up to see getting arrested,
yeah,
Scottie Scheffler would have been 1,000th on the list, but. It's really interesting. My dad came down from Michigan, and I got him a ticket so he could go watch on Thursday. And we were discussing the complete mess that the logistics were to get around and to get in. And you know, my dad's an 80-year-old guy, and he's not super mobile. And there was a mile-long wait to get on the bus, and the buses took a long time. So it isn't hard for me to imagine that at 5 o'clock in the morning in the dark and the rain and where everyone's driving to try to, you know, to deal with a terrible accident that cost someone their life, that there could be some disarray that would cause a misunderstanding. But for it to accelerate to cuffing someone and putting him in jail and having a mugshot be then distributed, that might have been a little aggressive.
Yeah, just a tad.
Yeah, definitely feels that way. And you come in Friday, you see him right away. He's out there, hits an incredible second shot on number one. Just the endurance to get through that. But then on Saturday, I mean, it just didn't look like Scottie Scheffler throughout the weekend. And you have to think that everything rattling around in his mind and what was going on there, a guy that seems about as unflappable as you're going to find. Well, being arrested is probably something that's going to make you a little bit more flappable, I guess, right? To have something like that happen.
Yeah.
We didn't see the real Scottie, it didn't feel, over the weekend.
No, and I think it's what I would equate it to is if you get injured, and then you can move around a little bit, but as soon as you stop, then you know it swells up and it gets stiff. I think he was running on adrenaline and gets back to the golf course, and it's emergency mode, and you're playing, mm-hmm. and then you get back to your room, and it all kind of sinks in what you've just been through. In addition to having a kid the week before, which I mean, let's not leave that part out.
Right.
So there was a lot of emotional stuff going on, so it's not surprising that there'd be one of those spaces where he would lose a little bit of energy. But you know, I was talking to a lot of coaches early in the week. I mean, even if you leave the Scottie stuff out of it, every coach I talked to said it. And my favorite quote, Mark Blackburn, who is Justin Rose's coach and Max Homa's coach, he said that they're going to have to shoot the grass off this place to win the tournament.
Mm.
And that's exactly what happened. And you saw a couple guys and Shoffley and then Bryson on Sunday. I mean, those guys went at every flag and they hit tremendous high iron shots. And when you can land it by the hole, there's no way to protect a golf course, even if it's par 71 and 7,700 yards. The protection is speed on the green and firmness on the green. If you don't have that, it doesn't matter how long the golf course is.
Have you worked with Bryce? Have you done anything with him? I think I had the wrong opinion of him. I kind of thought he was a meathead, you know, not the smartest dude on the course. But what he did for that young kid, making sure he got the golf ball, and then I see on Twitter he's got all these videos out there how to play the game. I was wrong on Bryson DeChambeau. What kind of guy is he, Matt Rudy?
I think you might have been partially wrong. I mean, he's kind of a strange guy. And if you catch him on the right day, he's great. And if you catch him on the wrong day, he's prickly. He's definitely a smart guy. And one thing I respect about him tremendously is that he's willing to try things his own way. You know, gaining the 50 pounds to try to smash it. He approached the U.S. Open strategy differently than everybody else did. And it didn't matter that everybody thought that was a terrible idea, and he beat Wingfoot into submission. So I think being willing to go outside the box and to do the live stuff and to be so present on social media and to spread videos the way he has, you know, on Twitch and on YouTube,
yep.
He knows where the next generation of fans are, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for that. You know, now, does that mean that he's always, the suavest interviewer, he's got some charisma that makes it easy to interact with him. That's not always the case, but you can't have everything. And everybody who said this weekend that Bryson is good for golf and it's a shame that he's not on the PGA Tour, I think they're right. He's definitely an asset, and people love to watch him.
Another guy I want to get your thoughts on is Victor Hovland. A disappointing start to the season after being maybe one of the hottest guys in 2023 and the way he ended the year. He talked about it early in the week. He thought about pulling out of the event. Good thing he didn't. Goes back to his swing coach. Is Hovland a guy I'm going to have on my board now going forward? Is it figured out as he reunites with his old swing coach?
Well, I can tell you, his coach should probably send him a bill right now. It's evident that getting back to the, whatever that commentary was the key that unlocked the door. I mean, the player definitely has to do it, and there's some complicated mental stuff that has to happen, and the coach has to facilitate it. So I don't want to make it sound like the coach hit the shots, but you got to be comfortable, and you have to feel confident in what you're doing. And the difference we just saw, this is a guy who was shooting 80 a couple weeks ago, and the difference in confidence and feeling like you're doing what you're supposed to be doing is the difference between shooting 80 and, being in the final group of a major championship. So there's no doubt the talent's there, and the ball hitting, if you look at the guys at the top of that leaderboard, it was a clinic. If you leave Scotty Saturday out of it, you've got Scheffler playing great in two real low rounds, and Shoffley and DeChambeau and Hovland and Morikawa, those guys are clinicians when it comes to ball hitting and flushing the ball. And when Hovland is on, there's not a pin they can hide. And he's fun to watch, and he's a guy that's fun to root for because he's relentless. Like Bryson, he's relentless in the quest to try to find it.
Let's talk about the winner, Xander Schauffele. I'm guessing, just watching him, that was a pretty popular win amongst his peers. Like there were a lot of players rooting for Schauffele to finally get one.
Yeah, I think what you would call it is an earned major championship, right? There's nothing fluky about it.
Yep.
It's not like a guy who's never going to win again. He's got an Olympic gold medal. He's won tour events, and ever since he was paired with Tiger at the Open Championship, 5 years ago, it's always felt like the moment's not too big for him, and he wants to, he's the guy that wants to go out there and get it. And I've done a big cover story with him in the last year and a half, and he is so much fun to be around. He's a cool guy. He's a smart guy. He loves golf. I mean, there's you could find many, many players that are less worthy of rooting for than Xander Schauffele, for sure.
So as we start to build forward and we look at the U.S. Open, one thing that I heard over the weekend is that's going to be a monster. One thing before that, though, I want to get your thoughts after being there. I'm sure you talk to a lot of people. Maybe you don't get to talk to or see as often with the whole Live PGA Tour. What's the latest? Did you find out anything new as you were on the grounds here throughout the week down at Valhalla?
I think what you're seeing with a couple of the non-player board members resigning in the last week or two is you're seeing a reorientation of the power on the board toward the player, towards the Tigers and the Patrick Cantleys. The players are turning the wheel. And then when Rory was not, returned to the player board, they put him on this negotiating board for the LIV. I think what you're seeing is that the wheels are turning towards some particular outcome. I don't know what that outcome is, but I think all of this, the movement on the board is evidence that something has changed. And it could mean that there's a deal is imminent. It could mean that the sides are entrenched and they're going to duke it out. But to me, that's the way the wind is blowing. And I hope what gets rectified is that people see, when you see how many people were walking around talking about Phil Mickelson before the tournament, when you see how people respond to Bryson, for example, I think people want to see the stars playing each other. And I think that's part of the reason why the PGA of America invited so many LIV players, not based on world ranking points, is because they want to see all those players playing in the same place. And they are recognizing that if they can do it, why not do something that some of the other organizations have not been willing to do, and make it a showcase where everybody's playing together.
Mentioned the U.S. Open. That'll be our next major, and we'll talk again in leading up to it. Tell us about Pinehurst. One thing that I heard is this, it's been a bear in the past, and it's setting up to be, as long as weather holds, that this thing is going to be a monster once again.
Well, I mean, I hope you don't think that after the USGA saw people, somebody shoot 21 or 22 under, that's the all-time scoring record. They might put the pins off the green. they've got severe green complexes that are crowned, and if they get the firm conditions they want, they can set it up so hard that people won't finish. And I think I anticipate it being a bloodbath, and I've been on your show, probably 20 years, talking about how I think the U.S. Open is highly overrated as a test of who the best players are. And I think I want to end this conversation with you guys to say, you can say what you want about the PGA and you can say what you want about easy golf courses. Tell me that there was a better leaderboard and a more exciting finish than this weekend with the guys that were near the top of the leaderboard, with the action that happened, with a guy making a walk-off birdie after, you know, a guy had a shot to make an eagle. You know, DeChambeau had a shot to make an eagle to force a birdie to get in a playoff. I mean, all those things were on the table for a 21-under win. So whatever the score is, the PGA has figured out the alchemy to make great leaderboards with exciting finishes. And isn't that why we're watching golf on TV? It's not to watch someone shoot 74 and pump their fists because they can hit it right down the middle of a runway.
Spot on. Matt Rudy was phenomenal television yesterday. Truly was. Matt, as always, thank you for doing this. As Trent said, we'll run you down the week leading up to the U.S. Open. I think the Thursday is the 13th, so we'll talk prior to that. Thanks for doing this, as always, Matt Rudy. Appreciate it.
Yep. See you guys.
See you, buddy. Matt Rudy, Golf Digest. As we take a look back at what was a terrific, that's well put. I mean, the score was,
right.
But it was theater. It was good.
And we had opportunities down the stretch, shot making.
Yes.
Because we won't get that likely at the U.S.
I don't think you're right. I do think you're right.
10 years ago, it was at Pinehurst the last time. Martin Keimer was your winner. Mm. Got off to a good start himself. He was 5-under, second place, 2-under, and, tied for 6. A bunch of guys at 1-under. Probably looking at something similar to this.
I would think.
If you're getting at 7 or 8, you're going to win this thing going away.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to see what that over-under is. Because that's a bet I hit. Because I think it was either 16.5 or 17.5.
For this tournament?
Yeah.
And I, was it?
Yeah. From what I'd heard going in, the soft conditions.
Did you bet the over?
Yeah. Got that one home. 5.5 maybe is going to be the number for the U.S. Open. Whew. This is going to be a tournament.
Indeed it is. We'll head to Los Angeles next. That's where Scott Dockerman is. The Big Ten meetings are taking place in Los Angeles. Doc joins us from there next. Miller and Condon. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.
Hi.com.
Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back to Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. 10 minutes before noon, let's head to Los Angeles. Big Ten meetings in L.A. as the footprint for the Big Ten has expanded to the West. Scott Dockerman is there. Doc Trent and Ken, thank you for coming on, Doc. How are you and what are you attending here that takes you to Los Angeles?
Well, it's the Big Ten meetings this week through Wednesday. And so there's a lot to discuss here. As you probably know, the House case, the settlement is in kind of prime position for for that to happen. Plus, there's all kinds of issues regarding travel and, you know, whether it's TV, how things are going to get set up in the future and stuff. So this is at this resort here. It's the first time I can remember they have the men's basketball, women's basketball, and football coaches all here, go along with all the administrators. So there's a lot going on, and, they haven't quite started yet, but they'll start this afternoon.
So as we talk about the House case, I mean, what are you unearthing? What are you kind of waiting for? And an opportunity to talk to these people. We know it's huge and the impact is going to be immense when it comes down. What's kind of the latest on that front and how close we are to getting some kind of settlement?
It appears that the votes will happen on Thursday as to whether or not this goes through. You're looking at $2.7 billion settlement. And this will come kind of in parcel where about 40% of it or so will come from the NCAA itself. The remaining like $1.6 billion will come from future revenues from the NCAA tournament, which is where NCAA primarily gets its revenues. So it means every school will lose money. Make less money, I guess, on the NCAA tournament. And it doesn't damage these schools nearly as much as it will, say, the Group of Five teams, you know, a Drake or a Northern Iowa, where, you know, if you take, $100,000 out of their budget, that's huge. So there's that. There's also the opportunity and probability that schools will be able to pay for student-athletes up to $20 million per year. The split right now, it appears to be based on percentage of female and male athletes. So if it's 52% female, 52% of that money will go to female athletes. So it's a very complicated case. I don't know that I could go too far in depth in detail on a lot of the other topics, but it is vastly important. As big, I think this is probably even bigger in the big picture as what we saw with 3 years ago with NIL and the Alston case.
Doc, Tony Petitti has been on the job, I think, essentially about a year now, right? I think it was middle of May last year they got. What would, how would you, not grade, but some of the highlights of Petitti's first year as Big Ten commissioner? How do you think it's gone?
Oh, wow. Well, it's certainly been impactful. Let's put it that way. I mean, when you look at the everything that has changed, I mean, being able to get, you know, Washington, Oregon, going with what's going on here. I mean, he's basically hopped on the treadmill at 12 and hasn't really slowed down over the course of this year. I mean, the TV contracts were finalized. So there's a lot, in this league, and then trying to figure it out, whether it's, non-divisional play in football, figure out travel. That's going to be a major factor here this week. And so, yeah, I mean, it's hard to give him a grade, but I'll say that his short reign thus far has been one of the most impactful that I've ever seen.
So our first opportunity to talk to you, Doc, since the surprise announcement a week ago in the afternoon, Lisa Bluter is retiring, and very quickly, 23 minutes later, Jan Jensen has been named the head coach, something that came together very quickly for Beth Getz, though. She had a little more thought time than just a press release that we saw there. Take us in a little bit. Your thoughts on the retirement, Jan getting the job, and the job that Beth Getz did in order to make this happen very quickly.
Yeah, it happened all. It came together very quickly, and it's funny you bring that up because when I was actually talking to Jan Jensen here when you called, this was something that she had to be prepared for, but also, happened very quickly. And that was, you've got to look big picture at Iowa. Is Jan the best fit? Or you could probably get all but maybe 10, 15 or so coaches in the country that would be interested in coming to Iowa. So she had to really hone in on that. I mean, it looks like a no-brainer to elevate Jan, but you've got to do your due diligence. And so when Lisa mentioned that, then she had to figure it out very quickly. You also had, it was a dead period, so they had to wait on Lisa's announcement because you didn't want to leave the recruits stranded, mm-hmm. because then they'd have a lot of questions and you can't talk to them.
Oh,
so
boy.
They had to be very strategic because can you imagine if that would have happened, say, a week ago, Thursday, and then you had to wait till Monday to contact them? That would have been tough on them and their families, and you'd probably have to try to go through a third party. Yep. But even then, then that everybody's going to be gunning for them, that, that maybe they're not allowed to talk, but some coach might call their high school coach and say, oh, by the way, So, there's a lot there. But I think Beth handled it about as well as he possibly could, and here we are.
Scott Dockman from The Athletic is our guest. Doc, do you know the end? I'm Pat Fitzgerald. If he was still at Northwestern, would his kid be playing for him, or was he looking to get out from dad's shadow? Do you know?
I don't know, but I would. My guess is he would probably play for him as a walk-on. It is interesting. Drew McPherson, who also goes to Loyola, and his dad was an associate head coach for Fitz, and now Fitz's son, and they're both going to Iowa. I was there when they visited last year against the Michigan State game, and it was kind of a surprise to see Pat on the sideline. But but overall, it was they have the one thing with Pat and Pat Fitzgerald and with Kirk, they have great respect for one another. Mm-hmm. So I think that's apparent, and so. Brian Fitzgerald will come on as a walk-on. Of course, if he does get a few more offers, Power 5 offers, then maybe that will change. But Ryan was certainly wanting to come to Iowa, and from what I was told by somebody very close to Fitz, and then also Iowa was really interested in getting him in the program as a walk-on.
Well, I mean, there's a billion analysts out there in college football. I mean, can't Kirk find a spot maybe for him, get cool his heels a little bit and come in? They don't need a ton of help on the defensive side of the football, but getting him in the building wouldn't be a bad thing, right?
I wouldn't do it right now. I mean, not until after this case is settled.
Ah.
I think you really want to make sure that, you know, there's been enough issues right. been around yeah. all the programs. You just want to avoid that. Now, if he comes back and he's considered, you know, then nothing, he did nothing and was found not, you know, not guilty, but not liable for any of that, then sure, you know, but he probably will have some other offers as it goes.
I would think so. Scott Dockerman, Doc, so you'll be there covering it for the 3 days. What can we look forward to as far as subscribers to The Athletic? What are you planning on doing?
Well, I'm going to really just try to hone in on what happens here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a lot of questions about the Big Ten moving forward. I mean, how are they going to manage this? I mean, being on both coasts, how are they going to handle travel? How are they going to handle being a new league with four main brands coming into it and everything from tiebreakers in football to what may be the future of championship games and locations. So I think there's a lot here, and there's probably a lot that I haven't even thought about that'll happen.
Good stuff. Scott Dockerman from The Athletic. Doc, thank you. Have a safe trip home. Enjoy your stay out in the West Coast, and we'll talk to you in a week. Thank you, Scott Dockerman.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
See you, buddy. Scott Dockerman, as he joins us from the Big Ten meetings that are taking place. Yeah, have we seen an announcement yet? Am I going to have egg on my face with the Big Ten the Big Ten championships going to be in Las Vegas?
I would hope not, but
they haven't made the announcement yet, have they?
They haven't. And we had that, about a year ago?
When we were out there in May.
May. Yeah, so a year ago.
A year ago.
Yeah.
Because the gambling story hit the fan, and we had this little birdie right. land on our shoulder.
Yep.
So it's been a year.
And there were some big, big companies, front office sports, a few others that were running with our story. And then, was it Nicole Auerbach tried to throw cold water on it?
She did. She did. And there's been no announcements since. So
it's not over yet.
No, we're still hanging in there, still in the batter's box.
But he brings up a good point. What if championship games are no more? Or what if they morph and they change? What's going to happen there? And that tiebreaker.
I hope they
You've heard me bitch about that tiebreaker a lot. It's going to be a disaster.
Yep, somebody's got to be in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if somebody's got to know the formula, not make it up on the fly, as we tried to do last. Not we did. Anyways, hour number two will start baseballing with Matt Snyder from CBSSports.com. Alec Bussey will join us at 12:30, covers Iowa State. It's Miller and Condon, 106.3 KXNO.